Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another PublicSectorInc.org podcast. We have a very special program today. I'm joined today by Mallory Factor. Mallory, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Mallory, as so many of our listeners know, is a professor of international politics and American government at the Citadel. Of course, also a president of an independent merchant bank bearing his name since 1976. And perhaps most noteworthy, the co-founder of the Monday Meeting, a nationally recognized gathering of elected officials, journalists, business leaders, and conservative authors here in New York City, of course, on a Monday. And it is really a place for conservatives to gather and have a home here in New York. You're a stalwart of the movement. Mallory, thanks for being with us.
Really appreciate it, Mike.
So we are here today to talk about your book, quite a title, Shadow Bosses, Government Unions Control America and Rob Taxpayers Blind. I will call it a tour de force of America's public labor movement, how it operates, and really its dire impact on American society and fiscal well-being. So let's get right into it. Mallory, why did you write this book, and why did you write it now?
Well, we started writing a book about the problems that America's facing, our ballooning deficits, our immense growth of government, our huge unemployment. And what we kept coming back to continuously was the greatest scam that's being perpetrated on the American people. That's the scam by government employee unions. These union bosses, the shadow bosses, become the real bosses in this country. They are the bosses of politicians in Washington and the bosses of politicians across America. They are the shadow bosses.
It's I'm thinking of Jimmy Hoffa in a certain way, but it goes a lot worse than that, I would say. Let's get into some of the facts in your book, because having read this thing,
it's not like Don Corleone. It's like when Michael takes over. These are Ivy League guys now.
We go to a whole new level is the point. And you articulate this so well, and you do so with real facts, which is what's so helpful. So I'm going to ask you, how is it possible that government employees can work on union matters while being paid by the government? You make that claim in here. And if the numbers you cite are correct, and I'm of course assuming they are, they work an average of 23 million hours a year on union matters at a cost of nearly, or perhaps over, $1 billion a year.
That is absolutely correct, Michael. Michael, it is just shocking. I mean, shocking. And on the federal level, they do it because of something in the code. Section 5, USC, Section 7131, written into the code, the law, gives them the right to do that. It is just shocking. I mean, they work, they're getting paid to do government work, and they're doing union work. In Homeland Security, even before TSA was unionized, 62 people did nothing but union work, yet got paid to do government work. And they got paid benefits, and they got promotions, they got paid all sorts of stuff, but that's not even all of it. As part of the deal, they get to use government facilities and pay nothing for them. They get to use computers, fax machines, copiers, telephones, and they don't pay for it. It's a subsidy.
If I did that in my job, I'd be fired. Why is no one doing anything about this?
Because it's easier to do nothing about it. You don't want to get the shadow bosses mad at you. Remember, they control over $14 billion a year in dues. And just the teachers' unions, for instance, controls $2 billion a year in dues. They can make or break politicians' lives.
Let's focus on a few states. You mentioned that half of all public union dues come from just six states, and they're populous states for sure: California, New York, Illinois, Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New Jersey. Now, does this mean that these states simply have more government workers, or is something else going on here? And really, I guess more importantly, what does this high level of unionization and union dues in these states mean for these six states' economies?
Well, you can see what's happening to these economies. These are the six economies in our country. What the reason that this happens is because there's been deals made in the past. And the deals are that to keep your job, you got to pay your union dues. It's called forced dues. There are very little worker freedom in terms of the government employee unions. They can't elect to be in or out of a union. They can't elect to have the right to petition government. They're under compulsory unionism. It is just shocking. It is just shocking. They have very little rights, and that's what Shadow Bosses, our book, is about. What the problems are and what the solutions are as well. We have a 5-point program to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. I want to come to your program in a moment. Just one more eye-popping note that I think our listeners would like to hear. You say that union violence is rarely prosecuted and it is legally condoned during strikes. Now, can you explain the backstory here? Because surely violence is violence, crime is a crime. Why on earth are we saying that, or is the law saying that you could be violent during a strike without fear of repercussions?
There is a Supreme Court decision called U.S. versus Edmonds, where it basically said that if you commit violence for the purpose of unionism, you get a get-out-of-jail card. You're allowed to do it. It is just unbelievable that it exists. And it does. And there's been bills put in to change the law, and we've not been able to get those bills passed because the shadow bosses tell their bought and paid for politicians that if they don't stop it, they're out and they'll get somebody else to take their place.
This is a great segue because, again, this book has so many wonderful statistics, and I urge our listeners to get out there, buy this thing, read it, quote it. But you cite another great stat, that 68% of registered voters believe government employee unions have too much influence over the politicians that pass the laws and negotiate with them. Now, this is a figure that keeps in line with polling we did here at MI in September of 2011.
By the way, at Manhattan Institute, you guys do a great job. And we quote so many people from the Manhattan Institute in our book. I mean, you guys are truly the stalwarts of this area. And people should be reading in your material and supporting you.
I appreciate it.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I had to say that, Michael.
I'll always allow an interruption like that. Thank you. But back to these numbers. 68% is a compelling majority. It's not 51% or 52%. What has to change to make this issue resonate, to get those bills that you mentioned through those legislatures, if nearly 70% of Americans say they want to see a change to this thing?
The problem is that the gasoline in the engine of socialism and the engine of leftist thought is the money coming from the government employee unions. They're the gasoline in the engine. And what happens is that they spend vast amounts of money on politicians to do their bidding, and they get bought and paid for politicians. Mm-hmm. To be able to change it, what we have to do is, I like to call it a very simple 5-step program, and the steps are real simple. The ultimate goal, first of all, is to give America its freedom back. We have to give workers freedom to sell their own labor, which means no forced collective bargaining, the freedom to decide whether they want a union to represent them, and the freedom to decide whether they want to support a union financially. We stop the subsidies, and we have a secret ballot election regularly to decide whether they even want a union at all. If you do those simple little things, give people the right to a secret ballot election every 2, 3, 4 years. You pick the number.
Sure.
If you tell people they don't have to be part of a union if they don't want to, they don't have to pay dues to a union if they don't want to, they don't have to be under the union's collective bargaining, and we stop subsidizing them with $1 billion-plus a year, you will see a lot more freedom. You will see America thrive. You will see unemployment go down. You will see our deficits go down. You'll see the growth of government go down.
It sounds rather American and uncontroversial to me, but perhaps I'm among the converted. But it's the right message and clearly at the right time.
You have to realize that the government unions were verboten. Even the union leaders said that government employee unions were bad. George Meany said that you couldn't collectively bargain with government. And he was the former head of the AFL-CIO. But what's happened is over time, they've recognized the fact that the government employee union, the shadow bosses, recognize the fact that if they put politicians in to support that, they could get a lot more money in terms of dues and likewise then use part of that to keep electing the wrong politicians for our country.
You know, it's such a great title, as I hear you talk, Shadow Bosses, because you do think of this kind of industrial conglomerate that's really out to do bad instead of good, and it's just so aptly named. Let's jump into two quick issue areas, healthcare and education. You say that the high level of union support for Obamacare, there was obviously a high level of union support for Obamacare, but that this was one of the greatest mysteries of modern politics. Can you expand on that?
Because
this
is something that we found out through when we were writing Shadow Bosses. We had about over 500 interviews of people, and we were told on some of the interviews we had with some union people that this is a brass ring, not the only one, but socialized medicine. Let me give you an analogy. Before Canada had socialized medicine, less than 10% of its people in the healthcare area, workers in the healthcare area, were unionized. After socialized medicine, it's now 60%.
Mm-hmm.
Under Obamacare, we will go from 17 million to 21 million employees in the healthcare area. If we follow Canada's example, which we will, and the government employee union heads know this, the shadow bosses know this, they can have up to 21 million new members. They only have 1.5 million now.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind, every million new members that they can force into giving them dues is $1 billion in their coffers in dues alone. Every million members. You could get up to 21 million members because of Obamacare.
Wow.
And you do the math. They could get up to $21 billion. That is huge.
It's a business. It's a business.
That's more than the top 25% of our revenue, the top 25% of our Fortune 500 companies.
And then their political power, which is already pretty much unmatched, would be even further unmatched, and the cycle would continue. While we're on the notion of large public employee unions, and I want to use this as our second to last point, you dedicate an entire chapter of your book to the teachers' unions, and a PSI contributor who you quote and we all know and love, Terry Moe, he's written an entire book on this subject. What should the reader interpret this to mean? Are teachers' unions somehow the most influential in electoral politics? Are they somehow the worst of the worst? Because I liked my teacher. What's at play here?
Well, the fact is the teachers' unions take in $2 billion a year in dues. That's simple. That is a huge amount of money. That's before special assessments. That's before PAC contributions, political action committee contributions. That's before stimulus money that they get. $2 billion just in dues alone. That gives them an awful lot of influence. And any time you try to change anything, you find out very rapidly that they come up with the mantra that you're against children.
Mm-hmm.
That's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. What it is they are trying to maximize dues. Remember, the teachers' unions don't represent the children. As a matter of fact, you probably know this, that there is a famous quote that's attributed to Albert Shanker. Some people say he said it, some people say he didn't, but it actually gives you the feeling for what the teachers' union is all about, teachers' unions, and that is when children pay dues, that's when we'll represent children.
So we as guardians of reform, champions of reform, need to ensure that that division is made and that we show that these unions do not represent, per se, the taxpayer, the children, but instead the biddings of these shadow bosses.
Right, and keep in mind, our K-12 education programs are a disaster. We have gone from in the 1960s of student to teacher or classroom ratio of 18 to 1 to 8 to 1, and it has done no good. We are still exactly the same, and huge amounts of studies have been done to find out if classroom size has some impact.
Right.
There's been 112 studies done that we can find. 103 of them concluded that smaller class size did not improve students' performance at all. And McKinsey and Company verified that.
Well, that's a clear majority in favor of common sense. Mallory, last question. Our time is running short. you told me why you wrote this book. What is the one takeaway? If you had to boil this down to one thing that you want elected officials who are currently in office in city and state government, what do you want them to take away?
In Shadow Bosses, you will find out how government unions really control our political process. And you'll be shocked and surprised to the extent that they do it. And there is a plan to give freedom back to the workers of our country, including our government workers. We need to solve our government problems, and that's what Shadow Bosses, the book, helps us do.
Well, Mallory, thank you so much for joining us. Again, the book is Shadow Bosses, Government Unions Control America and Rob Taxpayers Blind. I urge our listeners to get out and buy a copy of this book and start incorporating it into their daily talking points and dinner conversations. Mallory, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Michael, thank you.
Take care.